So you have Jesus going into Jerusalem and realizing that a conflict is coming. And you have the disciples going with him and being in a total state of projection, illusion and projection, so that they do not understand the nature of what is going to happen. We have already seen that he could not in any way participate in the Passover feast. The Passover feast, as we know, is that great holiday of the Jewish nation where they became emancipated from Egypt, where after all of the plagues that were brought forth to Egypt, the final one was the instruction to kill a lamb and splash the blood over the doorway so that when the angel of death came to eliminate the firstborn of the Egyptians, which was the final plague, the ones that had the blood of the lamb over the doorpost would be passed over. And so the Passover is the celebration of the emancipation of the Hebrew people and the moving out with Moses, which finally made them the kingdom of priests that God suggested they would be if they would always follow his ways and his commandments. Jesus could not celebrate the Passover. I feel that he tried because he gave instructions. He told his disciples to go to a certain place and ask the man if they could use his house. And they went and prepared the Passover. And he said that he could not, that he could not eat the Passover. And he says a very interesting thing in the text, and you have to wonder what it means. I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until I drink it new in the kingdom of God. And you have to meditate in what that would mean. What did he mean? He would not drink it until he drank it new in the kingdom of God. He also said, I will not drink again of the fruit of the vine until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God. So it's worth meditating a great deal on what Jesus could have meant. We can conjecture that he meant that there is a place after death, a dimension after death, in which perhaps symbolically there would be some kind of celebration. We take that portion and we appropriate it. We take it into the third age, which we have, and say that we have a new covenant with God, and it is based on that statement of Jesus. And the covenant with God is not the communion of remembrance any longer, which is the Christian communion. The Christian communion is doing this in remembrance of Jesus. We say we do not do it in remembrance of Jesus. We fulfill the prophecy if we take totality of his spirit and truth into ourselves. If we then claim that spirit and that truth to be resurrected in us, and we differ with the fundamentalists only in one thing. We also believe with them that this is the age of the second coming. It is the age of the resurrection. But the resurrection and the second coming is not the historical personality of Jesus coming on clouds from heaven. It is the spirit that he recommended and the way that he advocated, adopted by us, lived by us in its totality, manifested in us, so that we become the resurrection. And it is not one person who has claim to the resurrection. We are all called to the resurrection of the spirit and the truth. So we say the covenant that we have, if we will do that in this third age, is that we drink in living fellowship with Jesus. And in that way, he drinks it new in the kingdom of God. So we say we will fulfill that prophecy that he made and say that we are drinking new in the kingdom of God in fellowship with Jesus. So that mystery is evaporated. And that is a legitimate thing to do. It is biblical, and it is also something that is very, very right to do. bring Jesus to life again in our own lives and in our own midst. Now, the requirement for that is that we have no hatred, and that we also include Judas, who is the betrayer, and we will soon see about that, and Cain, the killer. So when you have a ceremony in which you have communion, you need to always remember, we do, that Judas is present and Cain is present, because the betrayer and the killer is in every man. And it is a personal issue of redeeming the killer in ourselves and redeeming the betrayer in ourselves that we say we have made peace with both. They are not external people, Cain and Judas. They are subjective, internal states of mind and attitudes of human beings. And if you remember in the wilderness experience, we said that Jesus had a dialogue with his inner Cain. Abel and Cain were dialoguing. And Cain, etymologically, the word means possession, authority. But it is the negative possession and the negative authority of the aggression of the ignorance of man over against the enlightenment of the will of God. So we say in the wilderness, he resolved authority, he resolved superstition, and he resolved economic greed. And those are three issues that we resolve. But it's all an inner resolution. So that in the resolution of those three issues, we give the authority to God. We are no longer in superstition and illusion, expecting God to do something unrealistic that he will not do. We have a reality on what it is that God will do and what it is that God will not do. And God is not a magic, and God is not coming out of clouds and snatch people out of wrongdoing, and God is not going to take away the consequences of an action of cause and effect that is set in motion by human beings. So we say that if we will be of one spirit, and that is what it means to be of one spirit, not to have the division inside, not to have the conflict inside. That doesn't mean that occasionally it doesn't arise, but it does mean that the commitment that one makes means that I do not stay in the conflict, that I work very, very hard to resolve the conflict so that my state of being is a state of totality.